And good afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno afternoon. This Tuesday, the 10th of November, 2015, the day before Veterans Day. We have a great show for you today. Quite a few guests. Scott Burton will be here to talk about Thursday's Writers Showcase. Tristan Knutson-Lombardo will be here to highlight Sales Annual Gala and Auction. Grace Elliott will be here to discuss Sunday's Community of Compassion event. We'll get a preview of upcoming productions by theater at Latitude 58. Steve Coxis will be here to highlight this week's planetarium presentation, and we'll talk with Sarah Radke Brown about second graders getting a tour of the Walter Soboloff building. That plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note. I don't know how we fit it all into 1 hour, but we're going to do it here on a Juno afternoon. Stay tuned for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The South Dakota Supreme Court says eliminating residents who live on the Pine Ridge Reservation as potential jurors for cases in Oglala Lakota County violates state law and the state constitution. The court heard arguments in October and issued the ruling last week. The reservation encompasses all of the county, putting tribal and state authority in the same geographic location. In state cases arising from actions in that county, tribal members have been discounted for jury duty for the last few years. Victoria Wicks explains.
The challenge came following a negligence suit against a dialysis center. The 2011 incident involved an Oglala Lakota woman who fell and suffered broken bones in Shannon County. Shannon County, now renamed Oglala Lakota County, has no state courthouse, and so it contracts with nearby Fall River County. The trial judge in that case ruled that jurors are to be selected from Fall River County residents. He based his decision on a 2009 standing order from the presiding judge, which said, in part, that since the state does not have jurisdiction over the Pine Ridge Reservation, it cannot enforce summonses to prospective jurors who are tribal members. During oral arguments, defense attorney Gregory Bernard explains.
A summons can be issued, and a summons can be served, I believe, on an enrolled member. But the court has no jurisdiction on the reservation to force those people to come off the reservation and appear before this court.
What if they come voluntarily?
If they come voluntarily, that's part of the structural defect, Your Honor.
The structural defect Bernard speaks of is the potential result that only people who want to serve will show up, and they might want to serve because they have an interest in the case. He says that leads to bias. In last week's written opinion, the Supreme Court vacates the 2009 standing order and reverses the circuit court's ruling. Justices rule unanimously that eliminating almost an entire county's population from jury duty is, in effect, a change of venue for state court cases arising from actions in that county. They say any biases of potential jurors can be weeded out during jury selection. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Remembrance ceremonies for those who died in war were held in Canada over the weekend, and a main ceremony is planned for Wednesday in Ottawa as the country holds Remembrance Day. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, First Nations communities are among those honoring people for their service.
They fought for Canada in the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, and more recent conflicts. But some Native leaders in Canada say First Nations veterans have not always been treated like heroes upon their return home. They say many who came home from war were sent back to reserves and treated as if they were second-class citizens. Grand Chief Stuart Phillip of the Union of British Columbia Chiefs says they lost their status and their rights, and it was a struggle to regain them. During a ceremony over the weekend, Phillip said it's important that the service of Aboriginal soldiers be recognized.
Many of our Aboriginal veterans were highly decorated, and we take great pride in that fact. And we commemorate this very special day here on November the 8th to draw public attention and to pay respects to the families.
Many veterans of combat missions turned out to mark the day. The Canadian flag flew alongside First Nations flags during the ceremonies in Vancouver to honor the 7,000 Indigenous soldiers and Inuit, Métis, and non-status Indians who fought for Canada. Ceremonies were also held in Manitoba and Ontario. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
As events are planned across the U.S. to honor Veterans Wednesday, a new initiative aims to help homeless Native American veterans. A federal demonstration program was launched last month to assist with housing and services. 30 tribes were invited to take part in the Tribal HUD VA Supportive Housing Program, which provides $4 million in grants. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace ends January 31st. Many Indian health clinics are hosting enrollment events with help available. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and deductibles. More info at healthcare.gov/tribal. Scoop Dash. Support by Ramona Farms. Heirloom food products for your family meals. Ramona Farms tepary beans, pinole, polentas, and more. Available for Christmas delivery when ordered by December 15 at store.ramonafarms.com. Tom Nye.
Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
All right, it is 6 minutes after the hour, and this is a Juno afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 10th of November, and I have in the studio two very familiar, beloved Juno voices, that of Scott Burton and that of Cheryl Snyder. How are you folks doing this afternoon?
Great, Ben. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, Ben, and here hosting.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'm hungry because this is my lunch hour, so I've not eaten anything except some oatmeal very early this morning, but that's fine because it's for a worthy cause. And today we have a lot of guests, so I'm going to speak even more rapidly than usual. Forgive me, dear listeners, for that. But we're here to promote something that is actually a KTOO event. So KTOO, KRNN do such a great job spreading the word for everyone else. Every now and then something that's station produced deserves to get a little bit of the spotlight, right?
That's right. And we're actually going to throw in one more of our brands, and that is 360 North, because this is a television product that we are producing, which will be on Friday night. Scott, maybe I'll let you kick off the explanation of what it is.
And Cheryl, I was counting up. This is our seventh episode of Writer Showcase. So started a couple of years ago, and it was sort of modeled after NPR Selected Shorts, where you get actors to read really good literature.
Yep.
And so in our case, we have actors reading great lit by Alaskan writers, and it's really fun. If you haven't had a chance to come down to the studio and see one recorded live, it's exciting. There's cameras around, and you can see great actors. This Friday night, we'll have John Straley, will actually be reading his own piece. I think it's going to be a selection out of Cold Storage. You know, the 2006 Writer Laureate of Alaska, very exciting to have him there. Brandon Demery is going to be reading, Donnie Gott, Frank Katas. We all recognize those names as fabulous actors. So.
Well, I was going to ask you, because I saw John Straley listed as one of the writers and as one of the readers, and of course you just explained that he's doing both, but the other writers are Vivian Faith Prescott, Ed Sasser, and Melinda Moustakas.
Yeah, right? So other names I'm sure that people recognize.
Yeah, and if you don't, we've taken a lot of time to select these pieces, so we can assure you they're really good stories. And they kind of take us all over the place. To be in the program, it's not a requirement that your story be set in Alaska, but it just so happens that this batch is all set in Alaska, but all from all different places. So Melinda Moustakas has written a really great piece, which I just imagined is somewhere in the interior up north, and it's from the perspective of kind of this pack of kids left to fend for themselves and what ensues. Fun piece by Ed Sasser about the ingenuity required when you're living in a small little harbor community. And Vivian Faith Prescott, she is a Southeast writer. I believe she lives in Sitka, but she's got deep roots in Wrangell, and she's written a really interesting piece from the perspective of an aged Tlingit man and sort of his feelings about modernization and preservation of culture. And it's all of these are just really, really great, engaging stories. And they're short. You know, each one takes about 10 to 20 minutes to read aloud. And it's just, you know, it's super, super entertaining.
Excellent. Now, these are all very successful and known authors, but these pieces are not necessarily ones that have been published before that folks would have had any access to prior to Friday night.
Or they're newly published. Yep, they're all fresh pieces. And, you know, another thing I want to add is think about, you know, NPR Selected Shorts and the energy that comes when you get an actor to collaborate with a nice piece of literature. And that's what happens. This isn't just a reading. This is a performance of literature. It's a collaboration. It's very exciting. It's 7 o'clock this Friday. I hope people will come down. It's free. It will be on television and available on demand at 360 North after that. But it's fun to be there.
And it's going to be a live broadcast.
Not live.
Not
nope.
live, okay.
Nope, we record it, but we record it as live, which means that we don't go back and do any editing, which puts the onus on all of us who are involved to make sure that it comes in time. It's got to be no longer than 58 minutes, and we encourage the audience to cheer when they're supposed to and to not have other major outbursts in the middle of the performances just because we don't go back and edit it. So it's fun. It has that real live excitement feel to it.
Outstanding. And this is the seventh year this has happened. Have there been standing capacity crowds in prior years?
We get. I wouldn't call it standing capacity. Some of our
well, the fire marshal might be listening, so
you,
of course
if
not.
If you choose to stand, it could be standing capacity. But no, we normally get about 40 or 50 people, depending upon who the writers are. We have started this thing where periodically we have the author of the piece actually be the reader, sort of a guest performance. So those tend to draw more audience at times. But you know, I'm anticipating we'll get about 40 or 50 people there.
Yeah. Excellent. And there are no advance tickets, I guess, is what I was asking. So people, if you want to make sure you don't have to stand, you're not forced to take that option. Get there early, get the seat of your choice, and then be ready for this to start right at 7 o'clock because it is going to be recorded for live broadcast.
Exactly. Okay. Doors will open at 6:30.
Excellent. So again, the four writers are John Straley, Vivian Faith Prescott, Ed Sasser, and Melinda Moustakis. And who are our readers again, Cheryl?
We have John Straley reading his own piece, Brandon Demery, Donnie Gott, and Frank Katas.
Well, it's obviously an A-list, two A-lists of writers and of performers. So come on out for the Writer Showcase here at KTOO in the At 360 space this Friday the 13th at 7 p.m., but get here early.
Thanks, Great. Ben.
Thank
Thanks,
you,
Cheryl.
Ben.
Thanks, Scott. It's almost 14 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno afternoon, Tuesday, the 10th of November. And our next guest today is Tristan Knutson Lombardo, who's the Assistant Director of Southeast Alaska Independent Living, also known by its very catchy acronym, SAIL. Welcome, Tristan, to a Juno afternoon.
Nailed it. Thanks, Ben.
And we are here to talk about an exciting upcoming event, which is an annual gala and auction, which I'm going to guess serves some sort of a fundraising purpose.
That's right. It's our big fundraiser, our annual gala and auction. It's this Friday, November 13th, just down the street at Centennial Hall. And it is. It's our big fundraiser that we put on each year. A lot of people know SAIL, our other fundraiser, The Only Fools Run at Midnight, which you've actually passed on here to public radio. So you all are now putting it on. You have the reins. So this is kind of our main one big fundraiser we do. And it's a great event each year.
And so are tickets available in advance?
Yes, you can get them online at our website, which is sailinc.org. Or you can stop by our office. We're at the corner of Hospital Drive and Glacier Highway. You can pick them up there. Or give us a call, 586-4920, and we can run a card over the phone and get your tickets.
And how much are tickets, and what comes with the price of admission?
Tickets are $50, or you can sponsor a table for yourself or for others for $500. And you get into the event. There's live music. There's a great catered dinner by the Hangar this year. We have close to 100 different auction items, both silent, alive, as well as a dessert auction. And so they're usually great auction items, and then you also get to hear some great stories about SAIL, who we are, what we do.
Interspersed throughout the evening.
That's right, yeah.
And who were the bands that you mentioned a moment ago?
Doug Jones is going to play,
okay.
And he's bringing a friend who I cannot remember his name, but it'll be live jazz, so it's great for bidding, great for conversation. Yeah, it's a great ambiance.
Great to go back to the bar, get another drink, and
that's
make
right.
sure your silent auction bids haven't been outbid, because you know that's the way this thing works. People don't constantly.
That's the important part, yeah.
It is. I mean, because the money. And so, SAIL, what are some of the programs? I'm sure listeners know, but if you want to give us some highlights about some of the good work that SAIL does in our community.
Yeah, we are an aging and disability resource center, so we serve people with disabilities as well as seniors and elders throughout Southeast Alaska. We actually want to run a wide range of programs. One of our most popular and visible is our recreation program, Orca, up at the mountain. You see us in the winter, and we're kayaking, hiking in the summertime. We run support groups for people. People come in. We help with transportation. We have a taxi voucher program, a loan closet. Or a lot of people just come in and say, this is who I am, this is my disability, and I need help with these three things, and we work with them to find solutions.
So it doesn't have to be a comprehensive situation. It's targeted to their specific needs on a case-by-case basis.
That's core to our philosophy, is we really the people that come through the door drive what we do and where we go. So people come to us and say, these are the things that I'm working on, can you help me? And we work with them to figure it out. So
absolutely.
That's important.
And you mentioned ORCA in passing. That's another clever acronym for those of you who don't know. It's Outdoor Recreation and Community Access,
yes.
I believe.
We're all about the acronyms.
And before we went on the air, we were discussing the famous ORCA Ski-A-Thon, which I participated in for many years. But that's no more. That got to be a little bit logistically challenging to do up on the mountain.
Yeah. So we moved on. But a lot of people do remember that. It was a great fundraiser. We had a lot of community support from that. And we still have a lot of people that volunteer with us that remember that event. So,
but the important thing is when you go skiing, and we are going to be skiing a lot this year because it's
right.
going to snow a lot. I'm
it
a believer
is.
In that. Read Klaus Stolpe's column in the Empire today. He believes in the snow too. That there are a lot of people who have some physical challenges that are up there recreating, and ORCA and SAIL make that possible. And I think that's a really important program that you offer to the community.
Yeah, it is great, and Eagle Crest has been a great partner in that, and so we love it.
Outstanding. So anything else that people need to do to prepare? I mean, are you concerned about tickets selling out for this event? I mean, do you have all three ballrooms?
We typically sell out. We have about 250 seats available, so we're about two-thirds of the way there, and it usually does sell out. So I do encourage folks to get their tickets now because we do have people who show up at the door, and if it's full, it's full. So we would love for you to be able to get your ticket early rather than later. So you can get them on our website, give us a call, stop by our office.
Absolutely. And what is the website again, sailinc.org?
Sailinc.org, S-A-I-L-I-N-C.
And if people want to know what the goodies in the silent or the live auction or the dessert auction are they going to have to wait till Friday night, or is there any advanced listing of that anywhere?
They're going to have to wait till Friday night. I mean, they could call, and we could probably share some details, but it'll all be a surprise.
Okay, well, that's good. But I'm sure you've no doubt got some nice items for all the different auctions that are going to raise a nice price for the beneficial work that you do.
There's a little something for everybody, vacation packages, jewelry, tools, everything.
Excellent.
We got it.
Excellent. And so that's going to be at the SAIL. How many years has this annual gala and auction been going on?
At least 10, for sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's been – we used to be at the Baranoff, and it's grown a lot since then. So it's a much bigger event.
Well, that's the sign of a healthy event, and which is indeed a sign of a healthy nonprofit organization.
Yes,
so.
It is.
Well, good work. So, Tristan, anything else you'd like our listeners to know about the annual gala and auction coming up this Friday night?
We'll see you Friday at Centennial Hall.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much, Tristan Knutson-Lombardo from Southeast Alaska Independent Living. And don't delay, because the annual gala and auction is going to sell out, so you want to get your tickets now. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 10th of November, 2015. It's the birthday of the man whom Pope Leo X called the wild boar in the vineyard, the monk and theologian Martin Luther, born in Eisleben in Germany, 1483. His father was a farmer. The boy did well at school. At the age of 14, he sang on the streets in return for bread because of the family's financial difficulties. He had a very nice singing voice. He was noticed by a wealthy benefactor who helped pay for his education. He went to the university to study law, and then one night got caught in a terrible thunderstorm, thought he was going to die, made a bargain with St. Anne that if he was saved, he would become a monk. And so, when he survived, he entered a monastery. Parents were very disappointed that he'd given up his chance to become a lawyer. As a young monk, Luther was obsessed with his own struggle for salvation. He would flagellate himself. He would lie out all night in the snow, did not feel any comfort from it, was tormented. He went off to teach at the university in Wittenberg and went to visit Rome, where he was disgusted by the practices of the church authorities. Luther went back to Wittenberg and decided, after studying the Bible, that the church had it wrong, that salvation did not come from performing acts, but rather from faith alone. He wrote out his argument in a document, mailed a copy of it to the Archbishop of Mainz. On October 31st, 1517, he took a third copy and nailed it onto the door of the church at the University of Wittenberg, which was the custom at the time. The church door functioned like a bulletin board. The Pope threatened him with excommunication in 1520. Luther burnt it publicly, so he was excommunicated and called before the Diet of Worms, where he refused to recant his statements. He was condemned, the writings were burned, and the council declared him an obstinate, schismatic heretic. But Luther had earned the support of Frederick III, who offered him sanctuary and who hid Luther in his castle. And his writings and his ideas set off violent revolutions, peasants against the upper class, and eventually the Reformation. When Luther was 41, he married a 26-year-old ex-nun, Katharina von Bora, whom he had helped to smuggle out of the convent in a barrel of pickled fish. They had a happy marriage. They gardened, played music together, raised six children. Martin Luther, who felt that merriment and celebration, dancing and drinking, were acts of rebellion against the devil, who loves not woman, wine, and song, remains a fool his whole life long, said Martin Luther. Here's a poem for today by Dan Gerber entitled Sometimes. I fall in love with that one glimpse of her from behind, something about the bend of her arm, the tilt of her head now, listening, or simply the weight and sheen of her hair, hoping sooner or later she may turn, that she might be someone I loved once, or the other me I sense now standing beside me may have loved. Sometimes, a poem by Dan Gerber from A Primer on Parallel Lives, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's just about 25 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 10th of November. This is a Juno afternoon. And our next guest is Grace Elliott. Grace, how are you this afternoon?
I am well, thank you. And yourself?
Well, I can't complain. I can't complain at all. And I'm glad to have you on the show. And I know we have an important topic to discuss, which is an event coming up this weekend on Sunday, the Community of Compassion. So please go ahead and tell us what this event is about and how, what your role in planning it is and how it's going to take place.
Community of Compassion is the name that I came up with on the spur of the moment, frankly. When Bill Legere asked me, I was securing a room for this event, the first of which happened in mid-October, and the second of which will be this Sunday. And he said, what do you call this? And I said, Community of Compassion. And the reason is because this event was precipitated by so many deaths that have happened this year in Juneau, both from heroin overdose and from suicide. And I felt that one of the things that we needed to really begin to do was to create community around this, because our entire community is suffering from it, whether we're aware of it or not. And that we needed to come from a point of view of a great deal more compassion than we are seeming to as a community for people who suffer from addiction, from people who suffer from chronic mental illness, from people who suffer from depression, who may be at a risk for suicide. Because I think that just as a culture in general, we're more and more disconnected from one another through things that seemingly can bring us closer together, social media, and I'm talking to you over my telephone right now. I'm thousands of miles away from where you are. There's an upside and a downside to all this
technology,
all these tools that we have. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least you're not texting him for the interview. I mean, a little levity, you know.
No, but apparently somebody is texting me right now an address that I need to find in Española. So ironically, I am a lot of the emphasis recently in Juneau has been on heroin and the problem of heroin being so ubiquitous and heroin addiction being so ubiquitous, and that's really important work.
Yes.
I want to continue to say there's more, and suicide is a huge problem. Pervasive mental illness is a huge problem. Seasonal affective disorder is a huge problem. There's a lot of things that happen. We live in a climate and at a latitude, as we all know, that can be difficult physically and psychologically. And I think the more disconnected that we get from each other, the more difficult it is for us to get through the dark days or the rainy days. And so this event was meant to bring everybody together that wanted to come together and talk about what's happening in our town, what's happening as we see now nationally.
And this and really is a problem nationally. I mean, opioid...
Very, very serious problem.
And heroin, yes. Both have just across the entire country just skyrocketed to rates that haven't been seen in decades, is my understanding.
And we have had a very outdated notion of heroin and who's using it. So, you know, if we're thinking, you know, a couple of decades back, which most of us did until it came to light... We don't understand. We have not, until very recently, understood that this is across all social strata. This heroin use, and sorry, I'm a little distracted by the fact that I have such a business here. So what I want to emphasize is, I think that we need to do something different as a community. We need to change our views about these things. We need to come together and we need to listen to the people that are most affected. That was the original idea. And I talked to a lot of people that are in their 20s because, you know, like my son's class, they're disappearing. They're just disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for those folks to step forward and talk to us about what their experience is so that we can get a little better understanding of how we might address it. And our first event was very successful. The format's different than a town hall meeting. What we did and will continue to do is to bring food for a simple meal and invite people to come and share a simple meal. We have kind of big posters where people can write down what they think the heart of the matter is, what they think we need as a community, and kind of what's their biggest, wildest, most beautiful dream for Juneau. And out of these things, we can share some ideas. And there's a lot of wonderfully creative minds in Juneau and people with a lot of tools, new and different tools that maybe we haven't been using. And also, I think it's an opportunity for people to come together and say, well, what are the institutions that we as a community have charged with the responsibility of addressing addiction and suicide? And are those institutions listening?
Mm-hmm.
Are they adequately addressing these problems? What can we do to support them in that? Do we have some suggestions for them? How would we like to see this shift in our community so that we're really addressing the problem?
And so, because many people have died this past year, as you said, you don't want to see any more of that coterie, anyone mm-hmm. to kill himself or overdose or herself. And, you know, and the one thing you mentioned at the beginning, that this can be a drug problem, it can be a depression problem, it can be a seasonal affective order problem. For some people, though, those layer up and they've got all three or more stressors going on at once,
yes.
And that's when they can really be at the greatest risk.
So how this all really started was one person taking another person's hand and saying, do you know what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to send a shout out to Kyle Thomas, who's an acupuncturist in town who is grew up in Juneau and has returned happily and does an acupuncture clinic. They're now out at the Birth Center, and he was really the first person who just really helped me to just really see that it can be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
I can go and take one person's hand and say, this is what's going on, or tell me what's going on. And that's how it started, literally just talking to a person and taking their hand physically and saying, we need to connect over this, and can you go take some person's hand today and talk to them? And if they're hurting or if they're in danger, just hang on to that hand until you know somebody's got their other hand. Don't let go.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not complex things that we can do, but they can have a great effect. We really need to connect on a heart level, and I don't care how corny that sounds. We're a very disconnected culture of people in so many ways, and the simple things like coming together, taking a person's hand, saying, how are you, sharing a meal, asking, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
What are your ideas? That's how great things always happen. You know, if you get to brainstorm and just say, well, I would love to see a clinic in Juneau for people recovering from drug addiction that uses acupuncture, that uses diet and yoga and meditation. You know, all of those things exist. We right now in Juneau have people with the skills to do those things or to start those things, and we just need to come together and find out what everybody's ideas are or what they know about is working elsewhere and create a structure to take action out of that, and that's what this is meant to do.
Excellent.
But
so
first, it's meant to be a listening space.
And to give people, I mean, first, you know, grieving, obviously, this is still pretty fresh for a lot of people. So if listeners are interested, if this is something that, you know, they may be a little trepidatious about it. This isn't going to be recorded and broadcast like something we talked about earlier this afternoon. This is a fairly private, personal thing, but people that have never been there before are welcome. But when can they be there? Should they bring something for the meal? And some of the details about how they might participate if that's something they're interested in.
Yes, and I just do want to say briefly that grief is a really important aspect of this, and it's something we don't talk about as a culture. We're really, Americans aren't good at talking about grief. We're not good at talking about death in general. I'm making large, sweeping generalizations here. But sometimes in order to alleviate grief, all we need to do is express it and know that we're hurt. And I encourage people to come. They can come at 3 o'clock. It's 3 till 5, although we did run quite a bit over last time because a lot of people didn't want to leave afterwards. If people go to the Facebook page Empowered Community Now, you can send a private message to me there, or at Gmail, empoweredcommunitynow@gmail.com. Sorry. Message me about food, what they're thinking of bringing. I just had a call from Mitch at Bullwinkle's today who said, hey, I heard about this, and we'll send some pizzas over, and that's really lovely. Some other friends are cooking kichari, which is a vegan kind of wonderful hearty stew, and some friends are bringing bread and butter. So, but we'll have quite a few folks, so anyone that's interested, please go to that Facebook page, Empowered Community Now, and send me a message, and I'll message you back.
Thank you so much, Grace, for doing this. I know it came from a personal experience of yours, but you obviously are reaching out to the entire community now, and I applaud you for that. And I applaud Mitch Falk for donating pizzas as well. So I hope just one more time, the venue and the time and the date so people know.
Yes. And before I do that, I want to also thank in absentia Shelley Eidsness, because she was the first parent to step up after her son died, after her son Brock died. And I really feel like she opened the door for all of this. So deep gratitude to her. So please come Sunday at 3 o'clock. It will be at K2's 360 North Studios. That's the lovely, graceful environment of the television studio. Nothing will be recorded. It's just a cozy space for all of us to come together and to talk to each other and to listen.
Excellent. Well, Grace Elliott, thank you very much for doing this and for being on the show this afternoon. I hope you have a very good meeting this weekend, and I wish you the best as you continue to help the community through this critical time.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll all be helping each other.
Very good, Grace. Thanks again. Bye. Django Reinhardt there, Limehouse Blues, this Tuesday, the 10th of November. It's almost 39 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno Afternoon. And our next guests today are from Theater at Latitude 58. We have George and Cinnamon and Kayla and Melissa. So welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you.
So first and foremost, who wants to tell me a little bit about the organization, Theater of Latitude 58?
I will. I'm Cinnamon. I'm the artistic director for Theater at Latitude 58, and I'm director for Annie Warbucks. And our organization has been around for about 5 years. We started just little tiny. I think we had 17 people in our first play, and we've now got almost 60 families involved and three different plays going on. So very excited at how fast it's growing.
That's great. And you're the artistic director.
I am.
And so there are three plays being done this season.
There are. So we're doing Annie Warbucks, which comes up at the end of next week. And then we're also performing Agatha Christie's Mousetrap and Blithe Spirit, both of those directed by Karen Allen.
Wonderful. You know, a little Agatha Christie, a little Noel Coward, you can't go wrong.
Absolutely.
And Blithe Spirit, of course, I remember I saw the Perseverance production. Oh, gosh, it was 25 years ago now, but it's a wonderful play. No, I don't know about Annie Warbucks. So, Kayla, Melissa, do you want to tell me about Annie Warbucks, what I'm missing out on?
Sure. Yeah, tell them.
Annie Warbucks is a sequel to the first Annie, so, like, it opens, like, in the exact same number as the ending in the first one.
Okay. And are you in it?
Yes.
What role do you play?
I'm Annie.
Oh,
actually.
So you're the lead. Very nice. And how about you? Are you in it as well?
Uh-huh.
And what role do you play?
I play chef, party guest, and White House aide.
Yes, and are you guys having fun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you start rehearsals?
Oh, my gosh. They look at me. back in August. I think we auditioned about mid-August.
Okay.
We started rehearsals right at the end of August.
So before school started. So you've been doing this for a long time.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're probably very good. You probably almost don't need to rehearse anymore.
No.
Well, if only you could see the deer in the headlight looks we have here.
All right. Well, you said there's a couple weeks to go, right?
We do, yep. Okay. Yeah, the next week. Uh-huh.
And, George, what is your role in this enterprise?
I'm the right demographic. I'm also the board vice president, so I got talked into being Daddy Warbucks.
There you go. Dual duty, the board and in the cast.
Absolutely.
That's correct, yes.
Good. So the show opens, you said, in a couple weeks. What's the exact opening night and what's the venue?
It opens Friday the 20th at 7, mm-hmm. is when our show starts, and then we go through the 22nd.
And where are we performing?
Thunder Mountain High School.
Very good.
Oh, Thunder Mountain, and the auditorium there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a very nice space.
Oh, it is.
That's
it
good.
Is.
And You haven't been rehearsing it the whole time. You must have an off-site rehearsal hall, and you're going to move out there mm-hmm. to do your technical stuff?
We do. We do. Big thank you to the Douglas Community Methodist Church. They've been allowing us to practice there, and we've also done some at the Floyd Dryden Commons and a few other areas around town.
So, well, you know, I can tell you, I'm an actor at Perseverance as well, and in the real theater, you'd never get to rehearse in the place that you perform because theater space is too expensive on Broadway.
Right.
So you're getting some really good training being forced to move from place to place and still know where your mark is on the stage and keeping your blocking and projecting and not forgetting the balcony, all those things that I'm sure your director has told you you need to do, right? Well, Kayla and Melissa, what each of you can tell me, you can decide who goes first. What's your favorite thing about being in this show?
No, you. just probably getting the experience in acting because it's a thing that I really enjoy to do. So, and it, like, calms me down and, like, makes me happy.
That's a very good answer. I can relate to that as an actor. And what's your favorite thing about being in the show?
I just like acting.
So are you planning to move on from theater? Well, first of all, I should ask, this is the first show of the season. The next two shows are Mousetrap and Blithe Spirit.
Yep.
When are the auditions for those going to be, or have they already been cast?
No, those have already been cast. We perform those at the first week of December, and then our auditions for the next season will be in January.
Oh, okay. So this is all kind of done way out ahead of time.
It is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the rehearsals haven't started. You have your cast ready, and once you make it through Warbucks, or are you already rehearsing?
Oh, yeah, no. Karen Allen is already rehearsing.
Okay.
Yep, she's rehearsing.
Well, I guess that's 2 weeks away. She would need to be.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So.
Okay, good. So if people want to get tickets to see Annie Warbucks or one of the other two shows, Mousetrap or Blithe Spirit, how could they go about doing that?
Well, they can see one of these cast members if they know any of them, but also they're available at Hearthside or The Jack.
Okay, very good. And is there a place, is there a website or any other means to go and get more information about Theater at Latitude 58?
Absolutely. Theater@latitude58.com, and we also have a Facebook page.
Okay, great. So people can like you on Facebook.
They can like us on Facebook.
And then when after the show, they can rave and say, tell everyone how great it was and how they better go see it. Well, no, this is very exciting to learn about. And folks, it's Annie Warbucks coming up. Soon to be followed by The Mousetrap and Blithe Spirit. And I want to thank George and Cinnamon and Kayla and Melissa. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon?
Come cheer us on.
All right. Well, thank you all very much, and break a leg and have a great run of your show, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. The plains and the prairies, wide open spaces where the wind blows free, where there are few hills or elevated perches, where the rough-legged hawk goes hunting. When the air is still, it's inclined to rest, but as the wind picks up, the rough-legged hawk takes to the sky. It defies gravity, flying upwards with just enough force, hovering in midair with rapidly beating wings and lowered feet and tail, looking for its prey of lemmings, voles, and short-tailed mice that are active during the day. After breeding on Arctic cliffs and tundra hillsides in summer months, rough-legged hawks winter all across the northern hemisphere. Open country is their ideal territory, where the small rodents they depend on are usually so plentiful that the hawks have enough to eat. But the rodents are cyclic, with lower populations in some years, and in those winters, roughlegs may migrate farther and be more abundant in the lower 48. Find us at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
And it is 14 minutes before the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 10th of November. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Steve Kosius, who's here to talk about this week's planetarium presentation. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon, Steve.
Thank you, Ben. And tonight we're going to do a show on black holes, and black holes, they're black and empty.
They're also a great metaphor. The black hole of Calcutta was actually a pretty horrible place. But whenever you send someone a message and they don't respond, I always think it's gone into a black hole somewhere.
Actually, black hole of Calcutta is not the best metaphor, because some people emerge from the black hole of Calcutta. And black holes in astronomy are a region of space where nothing emerges.
And so, so astronomically speaking, they are kind of like a sinkhole? Or how does it play into the whole matter-antimatter thing?
Well, if we jump to let me just do a quick definition of black holes first, and I'll go to matter and antimatter issue. A black hole is a region of space and time where the gravitational force is so strong that light cannot escape, which means that nothing can escape. So when I said a black hole is black and empty, it's black because there's no light coming from the black hole. There's no light reflected from it. In physics, that's called a perfect black body. And also, the black hole is empty because everything that enters the black hole is inexorably drawn into the center of the black hole, called the singularity, where it's annihilated. So what's interesting is the interior of the black hole, in a sense, space is moving faster than the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
That's why light cannot leave the region of a black hole.
And how many, I'm not an astronomer, but what's the closest black hole to the Milky Way, to our galaxy?
Well, actually, there's stellar black holes all over our galaxy. There's probably around 200 billion stars in our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. And there's stellar mass black holes all through our galaxy. But interesting enough, at the center of our galaxy, there's a supermassive black hole that is around 4 million solar masses. And it seems like every galaxy has a supermassive black hole at its center. And it seems like the supermassive black holes are correlated to the mass of the whole galaxy. So there's thought now that black holes are the structural foundation of galaxies.
Well, that's kind of an interesting rehabilitation of their reputation. You know, they it was used as a derogatory term, and in fact, they're an important part of the ecological structure of the universe.
Well, even more so, there's some recent publications, Holographic Principle. In fact, Hawking just has a paper out now that black holes, the title of my talk is Black Holes Have No Hair, because it was initially thought that black hairs had zero entropy. In other words, they were very, very simple objects.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's looking like black holes actually hold all the information of all the objects that fall into it on the surface, which is called the event horizon, which is the boundary of the black hole. It's a mathematical boundary, not a physical boundary. But all the information of everything that goes into the black hole seems to be held in what's called a hologram, a two-dimensional encoding of the information of everything that falls falls in the black hole. And it's preserved on the surface of the black hole, the event horizon.
The event horizon.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in learning more about this and then actually seeing the show at the planetarium, you said it's tonight?
Tonight, 6:30 p.m. The show is free at the Marie Drake Planetarium, 1400 Glacier Avenue. And we're going to do the talk about the black hole, singularities, event horizon, holographic principle. And then we're going to also use our projector to look at the night sky tonight. And we have volunteers. I'm one of the volunteers of the planetarium. We have another volunteer who's going to help with the projector.
So this isn't a simulated show. This is actually looking at the sky, the real sky.
Yeah, it's an analog projector, okay. And we use it to look at what the stars would look like if it was clear tonight in Juneau, but we'll have it in the planetarium dome.
Okay, and that's probably going to be a little warmer and a little drier than standing around outside this evening.
It should be, and our dome's the largest in the state of Alaska and Washington, the planetarium dome here.
I didn't know that.
It's larger than the Thomas Planetarium Dome, which is 26 feet in diameter. Ours is 30 feet in diameter.
Well, there you go, Thomas Planetarium. That's 4 feet. You're never going to catch up on
However, they have a digital projector, so.
Well, that can be rectified, though, with the right resources, I'm sure.
Well, we're looking at that.
Okay, very good. So anything else people need to know about the Planetarium presentation series generally? Are there going to be more coming up over the course of the fall?
Yeah, we do a show every month, typically the last Tuesday of the month, but I'm leaving the country Friday, so we're doing it earlier. But there'll be a show next month and the following month and the following month.
Okay, very good. So, again, tonight, 6:30 at the Marie Drake Planetarium.
Yes.
It's free and all ages.
And free,
and it's for all ages. So, very good. Well, Steve Kosius, thank you so very much for sharing this information about black holes generally and the planetarium show tonight specifically. It sounds like a great learning opportunity. And, again, you don't have to stand outside, so you probably don't need to catch pneumonia just to learn about black holes.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Okay, thanks, Steve. About 6.5 minutes before the hour, Tuesday, the 10th of November. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juneau afternoon. And I want to welcome Sarah Radke Brown and Lily Hope.
That's correct.
That's correct. I didn't have it written in front of me, but I know Lily's last name. So welcome, ladies, here to a Juneau afternoon. Thank you for saving the best for last. And a busy afternoon in the green room there. So you're here to tell us about second graders getting a tour of the Walter Soboloff building.
Mm-hmm.
Go right ahead.
Well, it's through the Any Given Child Initiative, through the Kennedy Center, which is a partnership with the school district, and the JAC sort of serves as the blanket organization that works with other community organizations here in Juneau. And we've teamed up with the Sobolov Center, with Alaska Heritage Institute, to present this excursion for second graders, and every second grader in the whole school district will be able to see, go into the Klan House and hear a story by that Lily's going to tell. And basically, the initiative ensures that every child in the school district gets a quality, enriching arts experience. And back in September, they saw Othello with Perseverance Theater, and in January, they'll see the symphony. So this is our second, excursion. So we're really excited about seeing the Klan House and having Lily tell stories. It's
going
to be amazing.
And I want to hear about the story you're going to tell Lily, but I just want to make sure this isn't every second grader at the same time, right?
Correct.
Because that would be a little too much excitement. So, Lily, what story are you going to share with the young people?
We have three stories lined up for them. We have the famous Salmon Boy story, or a story that I actually won first place in with back in 2003 or 2004, and took it statewide to Anchorage at the University of Alaska Oratory Contest. And that story leads us off. We will tell the story of the Salmon Box, which is a kind of a migration story, and some of the second grade teachers are super excited about that because it kind of fits in with their curriculum they're doing with the salmon migration. And then the third story will be how Raven loses his nose. And the last two stories are actually from the Dauenhauer collection. They've been very supportive in sharing stories with us that we can tell with children and adults. So it's been really fabulous.
And that's just such a homegrown feel to it, to have the Dauenhauers being the sort of sources mm-hmm. to it, the three stories.
Yes.
So because they're not all going to do it at once, how many separate little iterations of this will be before every second grader gets to have this wonderful opportunity?
We get to have six different rounds, so three a day for a couple of days next week. And they actually get to come into the Walter Sobolov building and come right into the exhibit itself, which is kind of exciting because I hadn't actually seen it until last week. So I got to go walk through with Kari from SHI, and I get to talk about the exhibit and some of the Chilkat blankets and things like that, which is home to me since I'm also a weaver. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll come into the Klan House, and I'll drum them actually into the Klan House. So that's going to be great. They get that exposure as well. And then we'll do the storytellings, and they get to go home with a special gift.
Excellent. Well, this sounds like a great program. It makes me wish I were in second grade. So if I show up, just pretend like I'm still young like that. And so, well, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I think the Any Given Child program is great, and I want to hear you come back and talk about the symphony before that happens in January, okay?
Absolutely.
Very good.
Thanks
Thank
so
you, Lily. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Arena is now open for the 2015-2016 season with a 5-day schedule. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink or call 586-4540.
And that's all the time we have this Tuesday, the 10th of November, 2015. I'm Ben Brown. This has been a Juneau Afternoon. Do stay tuned for further programming here on Public Radio in Alaska's capital city. And tune in tomorrow. There'll be more great guests and news and information about fun and exciting things going on here in Alaska's capital city. And that's always Monday through Friday on a Juneau Afternoon. A real quick look at the weather. Rain showers tonight, mostly cloudy, some more rain showers, some snow showers out in the valley. Tomorrow, Veterans Day, the snow level will be 700 feet. Woohoo! And as the week goes on, there'll be some rain and some snow up in the mountains. So I think it's fair to say that winter is here. Thanks again for listening, and have a great Juneau Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AM.